Tomorrow, President Biden will meet with a group of bipartisan lawmakers to discuss his $2 trillion infrastructure plan. The Senate is split right down the middle, so these negotiations are key. A filibuster would require at least 60 votes to move forward on legislation, so either 10 Republicans would need to join Democrats, or all 50 Democrats would have to agree to change the filibuster. That might make passing legislation seem impossible. A lot's been said about how the threat of a filibuster is holding Congress hostage. That always felt like hyperbole to me, not really helpful in finding a way forward. And now I know why. It's a bad metaphor. Hostage negotiation works very differently than we might expect. The opponent is not the kidnapper, but the situation itself. And the techniques that save lives could help save our politics. Joining us now is Chris Voss. He's the former lead international kidnapping negotiator for the FBI. Today, he is the CEO and founder of the Black Swan Group. Mr. Voss, good evening. Welcome.
Hey, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here, and I like the analogies that you're using. Good stuff.
Well, I watched your masterclass, and as soon as I finished watching, I was like, I got to book this guy, because what you were talking about in there was fascinating in terms of the techniques that it takes to save lives, and if it can save lives, it might be able to save Congress. What is the one biggest thing that people think they know about negotiation, but they really don't?
Yeah, well, most people look at negotiation as making an argument or explaining your position. You know, Reagan, who was a great communicator, regardless of what side of the political aisle you're on, used to say, if you're explaining, you're losing. So it feels good to explain and make an argument, but it doesn't actually do any good with the other side.
There's a concept that you teach called tactical empathy. What is tactical empathy?
Yeah, well, empathy, again, is very much like what we were just talking about, demonstrating an understanding of the other side's position so that they actually feel good about collaborating with you. I mean, people love it when you show them that you understand, and they actually bond to you in a crazy sort of a way. And we put the word tactical in front of it because now that we know about neuroscience, and if somebody's afraid, the best way to get their fears to go away is simply call them out, not accuse them, not deny them. You know, that's kind of a neuroscience tactical move to make. And so that's what we teach people to start with, the negative feelings the other side is feeling. And don't deny them, just point them out.
And I want to be clear, when we talk about empathy, you're talking about understanding, not necessarily agreement, right?
Nice. I'm glad you put a fine point on that, because in today's terminology, empathy is something you only have with people you agree with. Well, it's not agreement. It's not compassion. It's a very compassionate thing to do, and it could lead the other side to agree with you, but it's not agreement. It's just demonstrating understanding of where they're coming from.
One of the things you talk about is tone and the kinds of tones of voice to use when you're trying to negotiate. I imagine that those tones are very different than what we saw in a House committee hearing with Dr. Anthony Fauci on Thursday. Here is just one moment from that rather intense hearing.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want you to answer my question. The American people want Dr. Fauci to answer the question. What does it have to be?
Expire, sir. If you need to respect the chair and shut your mouth.
That might feel satisfying, but it is the opposite of what you describe as the late night FM DJ voice, a very calm, very cool tone of voice. How important is tone in negotiating?
Yeah, it's a magic trick. I mean, it's a Jedi mind trick, because your tone of voice impacts the other person's neural circuitry and actually causes chemical changes in their brain. And the late night FM DJ calms people down. And when they're angry, the tone of voice they were using, like in that committee hearing, like, was that a committee hearing or was that
a
preschool
hearing
session?
Yeah.
Exactly. But you make a great point. If you're using a tone of voice and you can just taste how good it's going to feel to say that in that tone, it's wrong, because you're going to love it and the other side's going to feel like slapped in the face, which guarantees they will not collaborate.
When do you know as a negotiator, not necessarily a hostage negotiator, that's a different kind of a situation, but when do you know in negotiation when it's time to just walk away. I know plenty of people who have given up on the political discourse. Right. Those people won't listen. Those people are unreachable. They've been caught in some crazy cult-like ideology. They're too deep down a rabbit hole. Screw them. I'm done talking to them. We don't need them. Just let's just plow ahead and make the country a better place without those people. Is there a point at which you know there's nothing left to talk about and it's time to walk away?
Yeah, you know, that's a hard thing to do, especially in negotiations where we're all kind of in it. We're in this together. So walking away is really hard. The big shift is, what can you say that's going to appeal to the other side's supporters? Because, you know, the crowd that's cheering them on is going to have the most influence. And a lot of times the secondary crowd is the most important crowd. So what can you say that'll appeal to the undecided? Maybe the other person doesn't feel as attacked, or they don't feel kind of moved. But it makes them think, and it makes them think about what the people that they like, how they're going to react. It's hard to walk away entirely from any negotiation. Many times, just silence for a long enough period of time till the other side's willing to come back to the table might be the most effective move.
I'm low on time, but I did want to reference a Pew poll that shows that just 2% of Biden and Trump supporters say the other side understands them very well. There are two techniques that you talk about that I think are useful with this: mirroring and labeling, which, right, as I've used them more, yeah, I find, oh, these really do work. Before I have to let you go, explain mirroring and labeling.
Mirroring is just repeating the last 1 to 3 words of what someone has just said. It's ridiculously simple, and it's phenomenally effective. And nobody thinks that it would work, except I find people that really, really want to get inside into other people will mirror the last 3 words. The last 3 words? Yeah. And so labeling is just hanging a label on the dynamic or the emotion you hear from the other side. Sounds like you're upset with me. Sounds like this has hurt you. Those are 2 examples of labels, and they have a tendency to really get through to people really quickly.
I really hope that now is a point at which we can begin to rethink the way that we talk to one another. If what we were doing now was working, we wouldn't be in the political morass that we're in. So I think there's a lot of room for us to improve. I appreciate you helping us rethink a few things in the way we talk to one another. Chris Voss, what a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for watching our YouTube channel. You should know that you can follow today's top stories and breaking news and catch up on your favorite MSNBC shows all in one place. Download the NBC News app today.